surprises me because almost all the restaurants have like drive-throughs and stuff. Like,
Right. Hello.
hey,
Hello.
you're 1 minute late.
Two demerits.
Yeah, there you go. At least you're
No
not
problem.
like B Bill Bomer who hangs up on us
Oh
and
boy,
then
left
can't get
with
back on.
something because they're throttling the internet and speed, so the YouTube's hitting them even higher than usual.
Yeah.
Chris, how are you holding up at home?
I'm doing all right.
Um,
You're talking about somebody that loves to be at home. I mean, away from people.
I was gonna say, listen, neither one of you guys have any kids. Is it like paradise?
No, not for me.
I hate to say it, but my life has not changed that much. But I feel bad for people who are extroverts and just have like a real, just don't spend much time at home, you know? Yeah. It's gotta be really different for them. It's gotta be quite an adjustment. I mean, things are definitely all different, and strange. But not as much as for a lot of people.
Yeah, it really hasn't been bothering me much, to be honest with you. I mean, the only difference is we on the weekends there's no like we're not leaving the house to take the kids anywhere, and like even like last week or was it the week before, we had all these like birthday parties coming up, whether it was for a cousin's daughter's first birthday. Or one of their friends' birthday parties, and it's like nothing that I missed. It's like I was thrilled that we didn't have to go anywhere.
Well,
I don't want to go.
you're calling from your cruise, right?
No, it doesn't leave
That's
until
where you're at right
3 p.m.
now?
Leaves at 3 p.m.
Okay. I
So I'm
see.
calling from the hotel in Tampa Bay, Florida.
Gotcha.
Hey, are you going to you're not going to Tampa Bay to just to hang out, are you?
We are not.
Okay, you called that off.
Everything is over.
I know what you were
Just
going to
sitting
plan
there
on
alone.
doing. You were going to cancel the cruise and then go on. You're still going to go and hang out at the hotel
That seemed like a good idea on
at
the
the
day that
time.
we planned it, and literally 2 days later, me and Stacy were looking at each other. I mean, this was weeks ago, before they started canceling stuff, but like 2 days later, enough things had changed that me and Stacy are like, there's no way in hell we're calling.
Yeah.
That's how fast things were moving.
Yeah,
It's
you.
almost a day-to-day thing, like there's a new update.
I wasn't personally a fan of cruises in the first place, and I can't think of a number you could pay me to go on one now.
Well, now you can't be on one. Well, I know you
I
can't,
re
but.
I really wanted to go on a cruise. Like I've always wanted to. And Barb has always said, you know, those are germ infested areas. I mean,
I
and I
know.
was, and now that this happened, I don't think Barb will ever get on a cruise.
You don't think so?
Nah,
That's too
I
bad
might have
because,
to. I might have to go to your cruise.
well, that
If
would
I'm
be
gonna go
fine.
with you, I'll go hang out with you. We'll.
You definitely should. I have never been on a cruise, but like I've got, friends or family that would take one or two cruises a year. Yes, that stuff happens, but like I asked them, like, how often did you get sick any of those times with that norovirus? They're like, no. It happens, but it happens like I'm not saying as rarely, but it happens similar to like when a plane crashes. Because when it happens, it's headline news and everyone hears about it.
Well,
But there's hundreds of cruises all the time.
it's probably just as bad as if you fly a lot. You know, like if you're on business flight, because a flight is they don't scrub it down. Like maybe they do now, but I've seen them do that stuff. Because sometimes you're leaving the plane early and you see how they wipe stuff very nonchalant, you know.
Yeah.
That's why when Barb, when me and Barb sit down in a plane, I mean, one of the first things she does is she gets one of those bleach wipes, and we wipe down our tables and, like, the area in front of us and the handles and everything.
We've never done that, but we will from now on.
And then she gives us, after we're done with that, then we get a squirt of the antibacterial gel. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not as much of a germaphobe as Barb is, but cruises, they sounded like a nightmare to me before any of this went on. I'm not, that just does not appeal to me. I mean, I see how it's fun for other people, but the idea, one, it makes me kind of claustrophobic that I can't leave the ship for long durations of time. And two, there's a lot of, like,
water?
Social activities. Well, yeah, probably a lot of that too.
I didn't know if you had an open water affair. Like,
no, I like water. I like being, at least maybe not on boats and on the water. I like being near water on the shore and stuff. But there's a lot of, like, my grandparents used to always go on cruises, and they'd always come back with pictures, and they'd be like, "Yeah, this is so and so. This is John and Mary, and we were talking to them. They're from so and so. We had dinner with them this day and that day, and we got to know them, and we did this with them." And I'm just like, that sounds like.
But and that sounds like a nightmare, just based on what I know about you, Chris.
Totally disagree. I don't like having just random
people.
Conversations. Yeah, with people, like just random people. But yeah. Like my mother, oh my God, she's all about that. She initiates it.
Well, my mom and dad are that exact way. My dad especially. My dad will go up to a stranger and give him a hug.
Right, that's what
it's like, what the hell?
But I don't think, I think that honestly,
my brother's like that. I'm more of the let me get to know you kind of thing.
Yeah,
and it's a gradual thing. Like, I'm not going to initially go up to you and handshake if I don't have to.
But I really think that with the cruises, you can do as much or as little of that as you want, Chris. Because you could just choose to, you know, hang out. Like you
on
said,
the deck.
You know,
on the deck,
and
but I see what Chris
a trade paperback and sit there and read a bunch of comic books if you want.
But he could do that at home, though.
He could do that at home, but here he's at sea. He feels like
it. It just depends if you get that, like, that feeling of freedom, just being near water, and you know.
And the other thing is those excursions that you can do. Because, you know, again, the excursions don't have to be a social activity, but, you know, you could go and do all sorts of different things. Like, we had a bunch of things planned, obviously, and, like, a couple of them were, like, animal-related. But then another one was, like, going to visit some old Mayan ruins. And, like, for me, like, that would be, like, a really cool thing to do. And it's not something that is highly interactive with other people that you don't know. You know what I mean? You're going to be there with another group,
But Chris, it's even a lot for you for social with people you do know, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
like even at the con, like we're at the con, you get like exhausted from all the stuff kind of thing, right? Like you kind of need like, I need to go rest because it's so much social activity.
He's got to recharge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Recharge your batteries.
Yeah. Which it's, and so I do like doing it, and I do like, socializing with my friends and even if I'm at a con and Mike introduced me to somebody I don't know, like I can talk to them and I like meeting people and, it's all contextual, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm satisfied to have my little group and if that's all I have and I just see the people I already know and get a chance to connect with them. But yeah, by the end of the day, like I need some alone time, and definitely by the end of the weekend, I'm ready to go back home and have my alone time for a good stretch of time. So
I feel like I'm like in the middle between the two of you. And Chris.
No, I think you're more like me.
Maybe to some extent, but Chris, when you think about it, and Mike, like when there were some cons here in Buffalo, it was Chris that reached out to me to say, why don't we meet up and walk around and stuff? It was Chris that reached out to me to say, you know, why don't we do a podcast or stuff like that?
Well, you know, yeah, I guess I would be on the, of the three of us, I'd be on the other extreme because if I was near you guys, I would say, I would at least want to do something like once a month. Like, let's go to dinner and a movie. Let's just try to do this.
That kind of thing,
because that stuff is kind of important to me, but I, like, if I can do it, like, it's weird. I live like Chris here. I don't know my neighbors. I know one neighbor in the whole cul-de-sac that I even talk to. And we've been here for years. Like, I mean, yes, I'll wave and I'll nod, but I have never had a conversation with them. Only the neighbor that has the goats. Do I ever sit there and talk with them?
Right.
You know, he's the only neighbor in the whole, and me and Barb choose that, you know, like we don't go out of our way to go knock on somebody's door and here's the cake. Or like my coworkers. I don't hang out. It was much different when I was a new hire and we'd have like get-togethers and do stuff.
You're all young. You're in your 20s or early
30s. We'd go to the bars. We'd have a drink every Friday or, you know, like do social activities like go-karts or bowling or whatever. Or a broom ball, which was the most dangerous sport I've ever played in my life.
Well, I want to say that we know our neighbors on both sides and like across the street, but like in terms of like we see them and we say hi, or we might even stop for 5 minutes to just chat for a second. But like my brother, he's got a neighbor and they like decide like, okay, let's have each other over and or like just in the backyard and we'll have a fire or something like that. I can't even imagine doing that with our neighbors. It's like I they're my neighbors. I don't need to be friends with them.
Yeah. But that's the opposite of my dad. My dad will barbecue like and have the neighbors over. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my brother is the same way. Like he knows everybody. My brother's got my dad gene. Like he, I think I look like my dad. Like I don't know if you've seen photos, but
I
look more like my dad. I found out, you know, through one of those tests my dad took, that I'm mostly from Spain.
Ah, muy bien.
On my dad's side, so me and my brother were talking like, where the fuck did Myers come from? Like we really don't know because my dad's father didn't speak a word of English. Like he didn't it was all Spanish. Yes, he would know like a word, like if he wanted a piece of bread or something, he'd say bread, but he couldn't like say a sentence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like my dad would have to translate from all of the, he lived with his aunts. And they didn't speak a word of Spanish. And there was one aunt that would have to do the translating, or my dad would have to. And my dad's not the greatest translator. He can hold a conversation and do his own. And even when he was in the hospital, it was very weird because he was high on oxycodone.
Jeez.
And he started speaking Spanish, like almost to the nurses and everything. It was very strange, but it's more like a Spanglish with him. Like, he can say 80% of the words, and then he throws an English term in there, you know?
I like that.
Yeah.
Chris, I just want to go back to what you were saying about that recharging, because that's interesting. And that's why I said I'm kind of similar to Chris in some ways, is that if we have a busy weekend, like we got to go to my, like for an event on Saturday, but then we also have a birthday party on Sunday. And I feel like I don't have any time. I will often take like Monday off when I know that everyone else is going to be at school at work, just so I can have that quiet day. I feel like I need the quiet day before I get back into the work week.
That's different because you have kids. You have kids and you do activities and stuff. Like when I'm with my nephew and niece, I'm fucking
But
exhausted.
I know,
If
but
I
I was
if I
like
do the
that prior to
weekend,
kids too.
no, I am.
If
They
we nonstop
wear
events,
me.
I needed a
It's
day.
the with kids. It's nonstop. They don't fucking have an off button.
I
It,
haven't
it's like
found
the Energizer Bunny. You know, it's a boom, 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 boom. It's constant, and you like don't get like you can't even like have a sit down and just say, oh, I could relax now.
No, that's true, but I was like that before the kids too. I just needed like quiet time.
Ultimately, I don't think that like if we're a little bit different, the three of us are a little bit different from each other, but I think we're all like sort of in the same ballpark. Like Mike said, we're not, none of us are the type that are going to be like having our neighbors over to barbecue on the weekends and stuff like that. Like, I mean, we're not exactly the same, but I think like we're in the same ballpark. And I don't consider myself antisocial. I just consider myself an introvert,
Yeah.
which is not, which is to me, it's not the same thing,
It's not the same thing.
and so, yeah, I guess getting back to what started this all, I just cruises. I think part of, I think a big factor of it is the mode of transportation too, of just being on the boat a lot. I don't know, maybe I would like it more than I thought, but I do like to travel. Kara and I really, we enjoy taking vacations and stuff like that and going new places. And traveling does bring me out of my shell a little bit too. I'm more adventurous when I'm on vacation because I want to get the most out of the time, you know?
Well, you want to explore different things too.
Yeah.
Like you don't go. It's different because you're probably there. You're more routine. Like,
Yeah, and like,
go to
yeah,
this
exactly.
place, go to this place, go to this place, and then you're home. And
Yeah,
then
because.
you want to explore outside of the norm, so you are a bit more adventurous. But I think all of
Yeah.
us are. We want to see something, or do something
Right.
different, or eat something different, or.
Yeah, because I'll get back home and I'll be like, why haven't I ever bothered to go to that place that's been, open for a couple years? That sounds kind of interesting. That's like 2 blocks away. But when I'm on vacation, I'm trying all these different new places and stuff. But yeah, I
But
don't
like
think
my
we're
brother
that different.
was in a frat, like more of a social experience. I wasn't.
Oh, I would never join one.
I had like my little clique of three people I would study with, like for my whole college career. And yes, I would go to like IEEE functions and stuff because they were in Vegas at a strip club, but I didn't go to other but I didn't go out of my way to like go experience a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, one of the most stressful things is I got into a couple of honor societies. Like there, there's an honor society for math. There's an honor society for engineering, and one of the most stressful things I've ever dealt with in my life was as an initiation, they said, "Oh, we're having the honor society convention here, and people from all around the country are coming here to our university, and we're going to give you guys tasks." And one of my tasks, which was the most stressful thing in my life, especially if I don't drive I like to drive a lot, was to get in a van and drive a bunch of drunk engineers from bar to bar from like 10 p.m. all the way to like 4.
Oh, that doesn't sound
And
fun to me.
it was highly stressful.
See, but
Like
you did it.
I did it,
I
but
wouldn't
man,
do
it would have freak it freaking was a nightmare because
it.
they were highly intoxicated and they were like, "Stop and get this, stop and get that." And I'm like, "Oh my God, we have a luggage rack on top of this van. I can't get through the drive-through liquor like this." Yeah, I keep yelling at them.
That's funny though.
Yeah, it was very, very, I was very stressed out. Where some people would have thought this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. And everyone has like I don't know, like sometimes they feel a little bit more social than other times too, you know, within the week or each particular day could be different, but.
Well, I took a day off last week because I had so much anxiety. Like I didn't want to go into work.
Yeah.
I felt like I was non-effective, like doing my job. So I just needed a down day to recharge. And sure enough, I went back in on Friday. I was recharged. I got shit done. And then Barb's work went on a down week. Like they're not going to work. And I was like, well, this is my opportunity to take a week off. And this is going to be really weird because I've never taken a week off ever to do nothing. Like,
are you doing that this week?
We're not going in. I'm off now for a week.
Okay. You're off for a week. Vacation? Vacation
but,
time?
But it is going to be an interesting thing because this could be like a little retirement experiment. Like, what will my life be like when I'm not working? Like,
oh, it's going to be so much better.
I don't know. I don't know if I'll get bored. Like,
yeah, but you know what? This is hard to say too, because don't you have a ton of things closed there?
Yeah, everything's closed.
I mean, you can't really compare it to when you're really going to be retired. You can't go see any movies.
Yeah, our governor shut down the incline. I mean, like, let's say you wanted to go to a park. All the parks are supposedly shut down. You can't go hiking because of the narrow trails. They don't want you hiking, so they don't they want you to have physical activity, like go for a jog or go for a walk, but they don't want you to do it in like places where you might run into somebody.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Like I take Harley. Yesterday I took her for two walks for 2.5 miles, but she loves this thing. She's like, I get to
so
walk.
So does ours.
Yeah, she's.
We're home all the time.
And you know what? I find I love one thing. I will say to you is, if I do retire, I'm gonna want to walk a lot because I find it like my yoga. I guess where I get like peace of mind when I'm walking. And I am listening to podcasts, but I'm not necessarily always listening, if that makes any sense. I'm thinking. It's like I'm just processing information in my brain about what's going on in my life and what to do. It's like more of a peaceful state.
Yeah. You're meditating while you walk.
It kind of is. Mm-hmm. And I hear podcasts and I listen to them, but I'm not always 100% actively involved. Like sometimes if I hear him say something, I was like, oh, I missed all of that. And I'll hit the little rewind because I was like, I want to hear this part. Like I was listening to Tom DeFalco the other day on an interview, and I hate interviews, but God dang, I love this man. I every word that comes out of his mouth is why I love comics and why I love him as a writer. He just has this weird strategy of when he writes one comic, it has to matter. Like he has, even if he has a beginning, a middle, end for the story, but he has a ongoing thread for a bigger story. But he always has like three stories going on, and he talks about it being a soap opera, and that's what I love about it, because a soap opera, even though I don't watch soap operas, I know what the intent. It makes you want to come back. You watch this episodic thing, and you want to come back for the next one. And that's why I love reading Tom DeFalco. And then you throw in Ron Frenz, and I just freak out because it's just like my perfect team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So these are strange times, my friends. Very strange times.
But for us, at least that I know of, we're all employed still.
Yeah. We're lucky.
I still have to go to work, but some of you guys could work from home. But other
me
than
and Chris
that,
still have to work. But, you know, we have to take the long trip into wherever the computer is.
Yeah. Again, that's not something that's any different for me. So it's
totally different for me. And I love it. And it totally shows that there is absolutely no reason why we couldn't have been working from home all along.
Yeah, I wonder what that I wonder how that'll affect things long term for some companies. If
it could save a lot of money if you look at it, because yes, they're supplying you with their computer and maybe some peripheral equipment, maybe.
Yep, yeah, they are.
But they are not paying for your lights. They're not paying for supplies in the bathroom. They're not paying for your rental space in that building so they could have a smaller profile. They're not paying for if something happens on site, they have to worry about workman's comp.
Oh.
If you trip on your porch, it's your fault.
I will tell you that when they announced work from home, that whatever day that was, I guess it was they announced that they were going to do it for all of the all of our union members, in the around the 16th, and they got everyone home by the 18th. Absence went down, disabilities went down. People came back from disability. And vacation time, in terms of like day of like calling out for vacation time as well as calling out sick, it all went down. Now, of course, part of the vacation thing is there's no place for people to go. So I would expect that to go up in a normal circumstance. But like the absence and stuff, it was just like, I don't have to go there. I can do this from home. They weren't calling in sick.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's a lot of pluses. And for the employees, you basically have a pay raise now. You don't, because there's no free parking. We work downtown. There's no free parking. So now you don't have to pay for parking and you don't have to pay for gas.
Well, the one thing that I know I would have difficulty with and is productivity. My productivity would go down just because I've worked from home from before. My other job, I used to be able to take my laptop home and work. And what I end up charging is half the time because I can't charge the whole time because, yes, I go do the dishes. Yes, I go take Harley for a walk. Yes, Harley bothers me, so I have to get up every 5 minutes and open the door and let her in and out, in and out. I get distracted. Yes, a package comes in and it's DCBS and I have to open it. So what turns out is I have to burn more vacation because I didn't work. An 8-hour day is like a 4-hour day.
Yeah,
but I'm sure I only did it in little increments, like 2 days here, 2 days there, 1 day here. I never did it for a long duration. I'm sure as I train myself over time that would change.
Yeah. And I work in a department that does, you know, a kind of a customer service environment where customers are calling in. So those representatives, you know, are tied to the phone. So it's very, very easy to see in that type of environment, are they now less productive or not? Meaning, are they closing down not to take calls more often because they're now at home than if they were in the office? It's something you can see immediately.
Just out of curiosity, with that kind of stuff, you guys are probably taking metrics on it through some kind of server.
Oh, like,
You guys know how long a phone call is getting closed out, and you're probably rewarded for closing out issues faster than if you took 2 hours to close out an issue.
Absolutely. And you're right.
If you took 35 calls as opposed to 5 and you ended all satisfactory on those 35 calls, you're probably, wow, this is an employee I want to keep because they're keeping our metrics up. And they're dealing with more. And then, I don't know, they're monitoring your metrics.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Companies have a lot of different ways of tracking stuff, and it's also just a discipline, something you get used to, you know. And you have to make adjustments, arrangements if you have pets or other people at home. I mean, but that's one of the things that's been interesting about this time period, and one of the challenges is because not only people are working from home, but their kids are also home. So, There's right now, I think there's a, at least in our company, there's more of a forgiveness than usual of distractions and things like that because of that, because people's kids are homes and don't have a choice.
Same here. Yeah. In other words, they publicly say, we understand your kids aren't in school like they normally would be.
Yep.
So yeah. you have to take care of things that you normally don't.
100%, they're
being way more understanding because they understand the circumstances that parents are having to deal with.
Same here. I mean, they came right out and said, I mean, in the past, it's like if you're going to work from home, you have to have a solitary location where you're by yourself and ideally no one else is really in the house. Now they know that the kids are here and you're getting up and you're taking care of, you know, the somebody's fighting or they have to be fed or whatever the case may be. Yep. You guys are right. I mean, they're looking at all that. They're being very forgiving now because really they have no choice. It's either that or you don't have people, on, you know, serving our customers. It's one or the other.
I was on the conference call the other day and all of a sudden there was this explosion of noise and somebody muted real fast and then they came back and apologized because their two sons had just gone flying through the room yelling.
I mean it's to be expected at this point right now.
Well, Barb showed me this video. There was like a Zoom meeting and one of the girls forgot to turn her camera
off.
And she went potty in the bathroom. And like she snapped way late, but they released that. I'm like, oh my god!
Somebody recorded that and sent that out.
The guy farting in the bathroom was the best one. It was a city council type meeting. You know how they all have those like circular areas, those tables, and they're all answering questions. And the guy's like, I gotta go, and continue the meeting. So he goes to the bathroom, but he's still mic'd up.
Yeah.
He's still mic'd up. And he goes to the bathroom and he is just he's cutting farts and shit just like Dumb and Dumber, like when that guy had to shit. It's like holy mackerel. And then he comes back in and everybody's like trying to keep their cool, but he like had a fart attack in there.
Oh my god. Did you guys see the one where it's like I think it's a reporter of some type, but he's being interviewed from his home. And I mean and top it off, he's British. So, you know, very proper with the accent and everything. And they're interviewing him. In the meantime, his three young children come running through the room and making all this noise. And the mom is in the background trying to get them out of the room. And the guy, poor guy, of course, you know, like you could picture like the typical, like, you know, stiff, you know, British man. He's just kept apologizing over and over again.
Yeah.
It was so funny. But what can you do, you know?
There was one, I forgot who shared it on Twitter, but it was a woman, Spanish, I think, doing a video, and her husband walked in the background to say something to her, and all he's got on is a soccer jersey and tighty whities. So she, like, her eyes go real big, and she starts waving at him to get out of the way, and he realizes what's going on. And he like goes in one direction off camera and runs into something and comes staggering back into view because he like walked into the door or something like that. Yeah. And then turns and goes back out the other way. Yeah, it's hilarious.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I think it was Daryl that shared it. If you go and look at Daryl's Twitter, I think he shared it.
I haven't seen that one. I only see the farting one and the other one where the girl went bathroom.
That's funny.
I just can't believe though that somebody, unless she allowed it, they're recording these Zoom sessions. And I know a podcast that did it. Like, I've always been like, I don't want to do video. Like, I was on one podcast where that we could all look at each other. What am I gonna do to make you? You know, like you got to see my face. I've never been into that. Like the video type chats. I mean, it's one thing if you want to say, I want to show you something. Look at this.
Sure.
You need to look at it. But if it's just me with mic'd up and talking, I just don't get it.
No, I don't either.
Yeah. Like, and it's not like I could see if it was like I wanted to know what you guys look like, but I know what you guys look like. You know what I mean? Like for if I never met you before, maybe like the first time. But I don't know. I've never seen the appeal of like FaceTime or anything unless you really want to see somebody. Like I might be doing it more now because I want to see my parents. We were supposed to
well,
go
yeah,
for
because you're
Easter.
stuck.
Yeah,
You're
we were
stuck.
supposed to go for Easter to surprise my dad because his birthday's around that time. We weren't going to tell him. Barbara's mom knew, but we didn't tell my mom or dad because we've done that with my mom's birthday before. We just surprise them. And it's not like they have to prepare because we stay with my mother-in-law, you know, so like it's not like they said, "Oh shit, we didn't have a bedroom for you," or something like that. So yeah, we were gonna do that, and that's why I moved my vacation to next, you know, to this coming week instead of we were originally gonna leave the following week. Yeah.
Well, I was originally going to be off for these 2 weeks, right? Like you guys
Yeah.
said, I should be in Tampa right now. And me and Stacy discussed we're still going to take the 3rd and the 6th off just to have a long weekend and get some stuff done around the house in terms of cleaning and stuff. Not
Yeah.
that we could, I mean, we still could even if we didn't take it because we're stuck at home, but just to get a couple extra days and just not have to log into work. But that's it. So I'm saving a lot of vacation time right now.
Yeah.
That's one thing I was wondering is if it gets to a point later in the year where people can travel and stuff like that again, if it's going to be hard to like schedule vacations and stuff because everyone's going to have all this time saved up
Well,
that they
not only
haven't used
that,
yet.
but Chris, like for my place, like you can only accrue up to like 150% of your vacation time. So I wonder if they're going to go ahead and raise that cap temporarily, at least for 6 months or to the end of the year or something like that, so people don't lose out on their time.
Yeah,
Because, you know, who wants to take time right now?
we're actually we have like a use it or lose it system, really. We can't bank anything past the year.
Yeah.
So it'll be kind of interesting.
Yeah,
We
so
can
hopefully they open that up for you too.
roll hours in up to a point. Like once we
Yeah.
hit like a 400 mark, we can't we lose you lose
Yeah, see,
vacation.
that's how mine is too. It's basically like if I have 40, well, let's say I've got, 4 weeks of vacation, then I can get up to 6 weeks saved. But after that, if I don't use it, I start losing time.
Yeah. Yippers. Yeah, I don't know what this is gonna do to Heroes Con, but even if
When is
they do,
that? September?
even if they do open it up, it's in June.
Oh, no,
E
God,
even
that's going to be
Father's Day. Even if they do, even if they do open it up, I still have to think that things haven't calmed down to the point that I would be safe to travel. I have asthma, so
Yeah. I
I'm
will be
sort of at
shocked if
risk
they
if I.
don't push it
I'm at
out.
risk with the flu. Like if I do get the flu, I get really sick. Like I'm out for a month, even though I'm still working and shit. It knocks me on my ass
Yeah.
because I can't breathe. I've even had to go to the point where I go to the doctor because the asthma medication. I have to get a nebulizer, you know,
Yeah.
because it
Yeah.
just I just
Yeah, you
can't.
got to be so careful with that. And
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I wish that you could just work from home all the time and not have to worry about going into work.
It's pretty safe at work though, because the people that can work from home are working from home,
Yeah, which is good.
and
You want the
there's
less people,
not
the better.
the people that can't. We're spaced quite a far apart. I mean, when you think about it, it's over
Which is,
6 feet for everything.
I mean,
And even
that's
though
good,
they're
but you're
cube
touching the
walls,
same handles and
they're
stuff like that
tall.
in and out.
Yeah, but in all fairness, like near every door, there's these huge bottles of antibacterial
Sanitizer.
gel and everybody's washing their hands and they're blocking off their cube doors so you can't get in. So there's a lot of stuff, you know,
That's
going
good.
on.
Yeah, that's good. Well, this is what I'll tell you. If they end up postponing Heroes Con, and it's not because we supposedly have a wedding to go to in August, which I'm assuming we'll be fine by then.
I don't think they'll
Otherwise,
postpone. I don't think
You
they'll
don't
like
think they'll postpone
postpone
it?
and move it. I think it'll cancel altogether.
Ah,
Because
'cause they postponed, then maybe I would
scheduling
go.
a area like that has got to be not logistically viable all the time. I mean,
They postponed the Niagara Falls Comic Con, which is like at the what, like the middle of June or something like that. I forget when it is, but yeah, they postponed that. It's going to be in September now.
yeah. All
I
right,
guess
well,
we'll see.
let's what I think I'm going to do with this episode is I'm going to take this part of the conversation and moving it to the end and then start it. Then if people want to hear this chat about that, they can do it, and if not, they can drop off.
Flapping our gums.
Yeah. This was good conversation though. This is the shit I like to talk about.
Yeah.
It's good to chat with you guys all the time.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I have one question for you, Rob.
Yes.
I was going to ask you earlier, but do you need magazine Mylars? Because I ordered 500. I don't know if you want me to send you like 50 back backing and 50
Sure.
Mylars.
Yeah, just tell me how much they are, and
Oh, you don't
I'll
have
pay
to
the value.
pay for them.
Oh, I'll pay for them. Don't
We'll
worry about
just
that.
exchange that
Oh
the
yeah,
other
okay.
book. Yeah, I'll
Yeah,
just
I'll
do
send you that
that.
book.
Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. 50 of each would go to that'd be a take me a long way, because it's only those, you know.
Yeah, I just got it so excited because I've been trying to get restocked for a year. And this was during the coronavirus, and I called them and they answered on the first call, and I was like, "Wow, they're working?" Like I didn't expect them to be working. And I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to order the usual, 1,000 of these, 1,000 of these. Do you have any magazine?" And she goes, "Yes, but we're almost out already." And I'm like, "Well, I'm going to get 500. I don't need 500, but because I use about maybe 10 max a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it'll
Yeah.
take me a while to, mostly because of those. I get, well, now that you're gonna get the creeps, you'll probably start getting more, and then you get those DC sized, big
Yeah.
black label books. So,
So I probably use two or three a month, so this
yeah.
will last me a long. If you don't mind, that'd be awesome.
I'll that's one of my tasks that I'll do this week.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And Chris,
I know
I've
you were
got
trying
your.
to get some, and then for you, they probably said you'd have to spend over $200 or something like that.
Well, I tried to do it when I was doing my regular order also a couple times, and they just didn't have them, so.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I appreciate it. And I ordered on Amazon. It's a Blu-ray set of the classic Monsters,
Yeah.
Versal, right? But it's got, how many movies are on here? I gotta check. Hang on, I'm gonna
Well,
tell you. 30 movies.
it's got way more than I have.
Yeah, I've got.
I have the classic Universal, which has Dracula, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein. It's got Werewolf.
I
It's got
think that's the
Invisible
one that I
Man.
own
It's
right
got
now.
Black.
The one that I asked both of you about that. And Chris, I'll get you that DVD at some point when we're out of lockdown.
Yeah, that's funny that when you asked me that, because I picked up a board game called Horrified that's based on the Universal Monsters, and playing that got me. I had watched Dracula and Frankenstein years ago, but I think those were the only ones, and it really got me thinking, like, man, I would like to sit down and watch a lot of those. And it looks like they used to be on Shudder.
Yeah, they go on and off because these are like still valuable properties. So it all depends,
Yeah.
you know.
No, but wouldn't they be like open source now, like public domain?
They're not.
I know
I don't know what the
Dracula's
criteria is
public
for that.
domain, but I just don't.
I
I know
mean,
they.
Dracula the character is, but Dracula the movie is not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's kind of how it works, yeah.
Yeah. But like this collection, guys, it comes with all those that you're talking about, Mike, right? Bride of Frankenstein, Invisible Man, Mummy, Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon, right? You got that
Yeah.
one? The only one I'm not seeing here is maybe Phantom of the Opera. Oh no, it's there.
Yeah.
So but then it also has all these weird ones, like Werewolf of London, Dracula's Daughter, Son of Frankenstein, Invisible Man Returns, The Invisible Woman, The Mummy's Tomb, Frankenstein meets Wolfman.
Does it have Frankenstein, the Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein?
It has, towards the end, Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, meet the Invisible Man, meet the Mummy. It looks amazing. I ordered it, and that's when like Amazon was doing like a full month out. It was like I ordered it a week ago, and it said it would be at the end of April. And I went back in, and all of a sudden I looked at it again, said ship it will like shipping to, like a 2-day shipping. So I canceled my order and redid it, and yeah, it's coming by the end of this week.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
I don't think I've seen the Meet the Invisible Man. I gotta see that now.
I haven't seen so many.
Meet Frankenstein is my favorite of all the Universal ones because. You have the best of both worlds. Like, you have the comedy because you have Abbott and Costello, but they're under circumstances that are very horrific because you got the monsters. And not only do they have Frankenstein, but they have the werewolf and Dracula. So it's pretty incredible.
Mike, I put a link to that collection in the Skype chat, so you can take a look whenever you want.
Yeah, I love the. Oh man, those are all good movies. I just recently watched The Bride of Frankenstein. I thought it was phenomenal, like way ahead of its time.
Yes, it's amazing.
For many aspects, it was just I don't know, even the way it was told, you know, it was told from the author's perspective. It was crazy.
Yeah, that is like I think that's in terms of just quality, in terms of how they made it. I think that's probably the best made of those monster movies. Like you said, I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic.
I just watched, and I know this isn't retro, but it is Dracula. I just watched Dracula on Netflix, and I thought
Did
it
you
was
watch
the
all three?
I thought it was the most innovative Dracula, most creative that I have ever seen in my life. And
did the end of episode two blow you away? Like, oh my god.
Oh my god. Well, both episode one and episode two blew me away. I like them more because it was tightly coupled to the original work.
Mm-hmm.
But that nun, she sold everything for me.
Did you watch her, Chris?
The Van Helsing nun? Oh my god.
No.
I had to stop and say, Barb, watch this. Mm-hmm. Because what she did at the convent to Dracula, it blew my mind. It fucking blew my mind. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah.
And
Chris, if you get the chance, check that out. It's only three episodes.
It's three, but it's almost like three movies.
Yeah, what are they? A little over an hour each.
They're about an hour and a half each.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're looking at three little movies, and they're it's weird how they do it because when you start episode two, you're like, well, how the hell did I get here?
Yeah.
Exactly. How did I get on the Demeter from here? What the hell happened?
I couldn't remember. I'm like, where did we leave off? What's going on?
No, you,
like, am
you,
I missing something?
You lead off because he's with Nina.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the circle, and then she breaks it. That's how episode one ends, and then you're like, well, what happened? And now you're on the Demeter, and probably that's a part of the movies that they don't really focus a lot about. You know, like...
Yeah.
You get on the Demeter, and everybody gets killed, and then the ship gets it to London, and that's where Dracula's crate lands. But the characters that they have on here and what happens on that ship, it is amazing. It's freaking amazing.
Yeah, it is.
I loved it, and I just saw V Wars too, and that's almost like a pandemic with vampires.
I haven't seen V Wars, but I know about it.
Yeah, it was a comic book from IDW.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Matter of fact, they have Lock and Key, which is IDW. They have October Faction, which is an IDW comic by Steve Niles. So I think I'm either going to go into October Faction or Lock and Key next.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. All right, well, let's...
I just wanted to say we finished watching the season three of Man in the High Castle, the second to last season.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it, and I think what we're going to watch next is finally watch Swamp Thing, so I'm excited for that.
Oh, the TV show?
The DC Universe one.
Yeah, I liked that.
Did you?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Good, I'm excited for it.
I love Swamp Thing, though. I like that they pulled elements from the Len Wein stuff, and they pulled elements from the Alan Moore stuff.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I like read it both, so I was just enjoying what they were, and then they're doing their own thing. So I like when it's not exactly like what I've read, because I want to see something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. All right, well, let's talk some comics. Who wants to go first?
I can go.
All right, what do you got?
Well, the first one I've got here is two issues, Amazing Spider-Man number 119 and number 120. I'm reading my first Epic collection, guys, The Amazing Spider-Man. It is The Goblin's Last Stand is the name of the volume of Epic. It's a volume 7. And so this whole collection starts at 105. So it leads up to the whole, death of Gwen Stacy and death of Norman Osborn towards the end of this collection. It ends at 123, and those issues are 121 and 122. So there's a lot in here prior that really has nothing to do with those two issues. But I wanted to cover 119 and 120. I just read those yesterday. And this is a pretty interesting story. Previously, Dr. Octopus and Hammerhead, it was the first appearance of Hammerhead a few issues before, they were like doing this gang war thing because Kingpin, for whatever reason, is out of the picture for control of New York. And in the meantime, Aunt May had like up and left. She had kind of disappeared, and Spider-Man didn't, Peter didn't know where she had gone. And turns out she had moved in to keep house with Dr. Octopus. Because if you guys remember, much earlier on in the Silver Age, they actually, he actually became a boarder in her house for a short period of time. And they kind of had started to have a romantic relationship.
That was very disturbing.
Yes, which also disturbed Peter quite a bit.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons. But, like, she is insistent.
Makes it even weirder, though, because he was in Peter's body, too, at some point.
Oh, God. Oh, I didn't even think about that aspect of it down the road. But, it's funny because even, in these issues leading up to 119, like she's convinced that, that Dr. Octopus is a very good man. And that the nasty Spider-Man keeps beating up on him and so on and so forth. So anyhow, as we start this, Dr. Octopus had been arrested in the gang war. Hammerhead gotten away. So Dr. Octopus is in jail. And, but Aunt May has chosen to stay in his house. So Peter gets a telegram that's addressed to Aunt May, and it's marked urgent. So he decides that he's going to go out to where she is at Doc Ock's home and give her the telegram, because obviously it's something important. So everything's alarmed and guarded and stuff like that. So he arrives as Spider-Man, jumping over the gate and everything else, and then he ends up changing. And he's kind of pleased with himself because he figures all of the goons and stuff in the house are going to be like, how did this guy just like walk right up to the door and knock without tripping any alarms? But as he's getting changed out of his Spider-Man costume, he overhears one of the Doc Ock's goons talking on the phone, saying, no, we haven't gotten a we haven't seen the telegram yet, but you know, we'll let you know and stuff like that. So that makes him very suspicious, and he decides to hang on to the telegram without telling Aunt May. So after he visits her for a bit, he ends up leaving and going back home. And he checks the telegram, and it turns out it's from a lawyer in Montreal, Quebec, that says that they have an urgent matter to discuss and to call or even come out there in person. So Peter decides, well, he's going to have to somehow get out to Montreal, and he's not sure how. When he encounters Harry, and Harry has been, this is coming off about 20 issues prior of him having that that drug, those drug issues where he's having taken LSD and stuff. So he suddenly collapses in Peter's arms, and he was just getting out of his dad's car, and his dad springs out and starts screaming at Peter to let, you know, get his hands off of him and stuff, and he takes him away. So Peter's kind of worried that Norman had such a crazy reaction that, you know, is he starting to get his memory back, because he had forgotten that he was Green Goblin, he had forgotten that Peter was Spider-Man, so he's afraid that maybe something's coming back. He's like, he's like, all the more reason for me to get out of town for a while. He's like, but how am I going to pay for this? And he happens to see a newspaper that says that Hulk just happens to be up in Canada, you know, causing disturbances. So he goes to the Daily Bugle and gets Jameson to fly him out to Montreal to take pictures of the Hulk. So when he gets out there, he first thing he does is he goes to the lawyer's office, but the man's not in. So they agree to he talks to the secretary and agrees to come back later that day. General Ross from the Hulk book is a liaison with the Canadian government to try to stop the Hulk, because he's got a lot of experience in tracking him down. And sure enough, the Hulk is at a dam, a local dam. And so they go to try to stop him. And Peter tags along. He switches into his Spider-Man outfit. And they have a long, protracted battle. The military, the Canadian military is there. They're shooting at the Hulk, of course, just making him more angry. Spider-Man is doing his best to try to keep Hulk focused on him rather than the troops, because he knows he could make short work of the Canadian Army. At one point at the dam, the Hulk starts to destroy the dam, which is going to cause a huge flood. But Peter manages to actually change the water level in the control booth, minimizing any problem that might happen. But just as he's doing that, Hulk does knock the dam down, and both Hulk and Spider-Man plummet into the water. And it looks like at the end of issue 119 that Spidey's going to get crushed underwater underneath a huge boulder. It picks up right in 120. It picks up exactly where you left off, except now you see that the Hulk is actually grabbing this boulder and throwing it and Spider-Man out of the water way up into the air. So there was really no danger for Spider-Man to drown. He quickly he just fights Hulk just for a few more minutes, but then Hulk kind of gets annoyed because Spider-Man's just leaping and running out of the way, and Hulk can't get to him. So the Hulk leaps away for the moment, and General Ross with a helicopter decide to try to locate him, and Spider-Man tags along underneath. So he makes a quick call to Gwen, who's his girlfriend at the time, and he hears that Harry Osborn is continuing not to be doing well at all. He's having some sort of reaction, bad reaction to the bad trip that he had earlier when he was taking LSD. But after hanging up, he notices that somebody is following him. So as Peter, that is. So He kind of loses him, changes into Spider-Man, grabs the guy, and finds out that he's an associate of Doc Ock's, who's actually following Peter to see what Peter's doing and if he's trying to make contact with this lawyer that has something to do with Aunt May. So he gets that information out of him, and he goes back to the lawyer's office. The secretary is still there, and she says, okay, well, we can meet the lawyer at the Expo 67. They had the World's Fair 1967 there. So I guess they're going to have like a kind of a clandestine meeting there. And of course, as luck would have it, they get in the cab and they start driving, and who's standing in the middle of the road, still angry and upset, but of course the Hulk again. So he rips up the pavement, throws the car upside down, knocks out both the cabbie and the secretary. Spider-Man quickly changes into his costume and begins a prolonged battle against the Hulk, where basically what that means is that he's jumping around. The Hulk is destroying everything in his path and trying to get to Peter. But finally, again, like the first time, the Hulk kind of loses patience, and especially when a helicopter starts shooting at him, and he just decides to go away, and he leaps and runs away. So Peter quickly changes.
Can you pause for a second?
Sure, yeah.
I just, Chris, are you recording? Chris, are you there?
Yeah, sorry, I was muted. I am, but it stopped, and I think it might have started over again.
That's exactly what happened to me. I just wanted to make sure.
Oh no!
That you were recording. I've never seen that happen. We had like a little glitch where your voice kind of like morphed like, for a split second, and it stopped my recorder and restarted it.
Mm.
And it sounds like it did the same thing to Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure. It should be okay. It just means it restarted.
Okay.
But I just wanted to make sure.
I got it. Well, I was just going to, I'll just pick up quickly that the Hulk ended up getting aggravated, jumps away. Peter changes back out of his costume, and he goes back to the secretary, who's awake now. And this lawyer, Monsieur Rimbaud, is now there, and they start talking. And he's like, my name's Parker. Did you send my aunt a telegram? She's, ill. So I came. He's like, oh, of course, at last we can talk. And from the shadows, that guy that had been following Peter earlier shoots the lawyer in the back and kills him. So Peter's very confused. He's like, well, somebody shot him dead. And the secretary tries to reassure him, saying that, he's, as a lawyer, I don't know what kind of lawyer he is, but he's not a man without enemies. So he says, thanks, but, I wish that something else had happened, but I still don't know what this was all about. And he jumps on the last flight of the day back to New York from Montreal to get back home to see exactly what's going on with Harry Osborn. And so this was just a fun issue, seeing these two issues, seeing him go up against the Hulk again. But there was no resolution in terms of, what exactly is this telegram? What does it have to do with Aunt May? And why is Doc Ock so fixated on, obviously he knows what this is about because he's trying to stop anyone else from learning about it, trying to get a hold of it. But there was no resolution by the end of this issue. And as I'm familiar with, issue 121 is the famous issue where Norman gets his memory back and becomes the Green Goblin. And Peter's girlfriend, Gwen, ends up dying at the end. So I don't know when we get a resolution for what was going on with Aunt May, but I know the next two issues are pretty action-packed, focusing on the Green Goblin.
Physical or digital?
Me?
Yeah.
Physical. What's wrong with you?
I didn't know you were getting Epic Collections.
This is my only one.
Yeah. Is there a reason you went to that instead of the... Because I know you were reading them digitally, I thought, in the Masterworks.
You're right. I had gotten all those Masterworks because there were... God, whenever that crazy sale was that they finally stopped because I think they were getting complaints. They were like whatever, $1.99 or something, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had read them all again. And then in the meantime, I had bought this Epic Collection because I'm just a big, you know, the Green Goblin is my favorite supervillain.
Two-Face.
Two-Face is my favorite Batman villain.
Yeah.
But my favorite overall villain is definitely Green Goblin. And just because I knew that this was the collection focusing on him, on those two issues, which I do own as well, I just wanted to get this in Epic and read it through again. And it was fun. I mean, like I said, it's starting with issue 105. So it starts early on with a lot of stuff that has nothing to do with it. And these are stories that, you know, aren't collected a whole lot. I mean, it's like another thing of the Spider Slayer earlier on. It's got a whole thing in the middle with Flash Thompson and when he was fighting in Vietnam. It's got a whole thing with an election going on for mayor and a couple really kind of D-list villains that came and went. But it, just fun issues. It also marks the last of Stan Lee's scripting of this series. Last time he'd ever, you know, script any of this stuff, and Jerry Conway taking over. So it has a lot of good stuff.
Cool. Yeah. Chris is the one that got me addicted to Epic Collections. I blame him.
I know.
And then with my compulsion, it was a bad thing, Chris, because I own every single one that's ever been published.
Oh, thank you. In my defense, it doesn't take a lot to get
you. Yeah, but I had this mentality. The Epic Collections, like, bothered me because they weren't in sequential order, and I couldn't...
Oh, willy-nilly.
I couldn't fathom it. Like, it just... it's why doesn't it start with one and go to two and go to three? It bothered me. But I picked up one, and it was, like, Thor Volume 7 or something like that, and I became addicted. Like, I was like, this is the best idea ever. Because the volumes are really thematic. Like, they do a really good job of collecting the books that go into a volume, and it is like reading one story, and it makes sense. I love them.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. A little, there's not usually a lot, but they sometimes find some cool back matter to put in there too.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff in the back matter. Sometimes there's Muhatmu pages. It's interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking. I see that there's all sorts of stuff in the back of this. I was surprised. I expected that it was just going to be the issues and that's it. It was really nice to see that there's a whole bunch of stuff to look through at the back as well.
Yeah.
It's funny that Muhatmu, that sounds like something you could say to greet someone in a...
Muhatmu, yeah.
Muhatmu. You know, I just wanted to say before we go on, you were talking about back matter. Not really back matter, but I was so excited to see when they did that facsimile edition of Detective Comics 38. That
oh, the Robin one?
Yeah, because...
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay, it's the Batman story, which I've seen how many different times in how many different formats, but it's a facsimile, so it's the entire issue.
It's the entire issue, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a thick Golden Age beast. I mean, that thing's thick.
Yeah, Crimson Avenger, Speed Saunders. Yeah. It has all that stuff. That was great. It was great to see all that and read all that old material.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Very cool.
You're a thick Golden Age beast, Mike.
Yes. Thick Golden Age beast.
That's what his wife calls him.
Yeah. In Mylar.
In Mylar.
Yeah, you can't forget to wrap it in Mylar.
That's right.
Nice.
I can go next because I got a quick one.
Go ahead.
I read a lot of obscure stuff. So my first one is manga. How man? What Whoa. World are we in? But it's Americanized manga. It's from Viz Comics. Back in the days before they thought we couldn't really handle manga, I think they adopted a lot of manga in our formats.
Oh, yeah.
And this one came from Shonen Jump at some point. It's by Bushi Teriyasama Wa. He was born in, I don't know how to say that, but he was born in 1955. And he seems like a very interesting person. He wanted to grow to be a doctor, but then went to art school. And then changed his mind again later to go into film. But he created a comic book called Cobra. And again, it was published by Viz Comics. The thing that's very interesting is if you look at the cover of Cobra number one, it has an amazing drawing of a woman. And the guy kind of looks goofy. he looks kind of like more manga, whereas yeah. the female doesn't look as manga-ish.
I would agree with that.
And if you look in the interiors, it's done the same way. Like, she is freaking gorgeous. And he draws Mike, the female really, really well. And then
you would like the covers of 2 through 4.
Oh, I've already looked at them. But this is the other thing that's interesting about this is it's adopted by Marv Wolfman. So he took the manga and adopted it, translated it, I guess, made the dialogue based on the story. The other thing that's fascinating about this was Total Recall before there was a Total Recall. So that is essentially the theme, that there's this guy that's kind of like, has an everyday type job, and one day he decides, maybe he's in isolation, I don't know, he decides, I gotta go cash out, go check out my bank account. His bank account's low, but he goes to one of these like virtual reality, plug into the computer, live a vacation type deals, and he gets plugged in, and they kind of say, well, what do you want to do? I want to have an adventure, I want to be around a lot of sexy women. And he gets plugged in and he becomes like this space pirate. And then when he comes out of the dream, it's like all that stuff really happened. And he's not like out of the dream, but he remembers going to the place. He doesn't know what's dream and what's reality anymore. And it was a pretty interesting comic book. Like I thought it was interesting from, I think it came out in 1977. I have been reading manga, so it was interesting from that perspective. I thought that if I read this back in the day before there was a Total Recall, I would have sort of been even more blown away because of what they were doing. And it was, I'm glad I picked it up. I have the physical copy of number one. I was attracted to, you can guess what I was attracted to. The cover.
Sure.
She looks absolutely gorgeous. And she's like in this weird looking silver bikini and she's holding up this big old gun. And he's got a gun attached to his arm and he doesn't know how it got there, but it's there. So
yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah. It was a pretty cool comic book. And do you know, yeah, like, Chris? I mean, you're probably our manga expert of the three of us. But I'm just curious if early in the 70s, like, they were really taking manga's material and adapting it to our format. Because is that true? In other words, like a lot of comic books would try to adapt them to English and make the format the same size and look. Instead of presenting it in its original form?
I know there was, I don't know if this was the only, I don't think this was the only one, but yeah, I think, I know that there was a stretch of time in the where they were doing that a lot. I don't know how successful it was.
Eclipse Comics did that because I started reading, I forget what the Blade of something. It was in the same format. So it read like an mm-hmm. English comic, but it was manga, clearly.
So, yeah, I know they didn't do that for a while before the manga really took off in the West like it is now, where you can go to Barnes and Noble and there's a bunch of shelves of that stuff. And where they started, people became more aware of especially with the internet and the world becoming culturally smaller, people became more aware of what real manga was like in Japan and stuff, so there was increased interest in reading things in the proper format.
Yeah.
And not having everything flipped.
Americanized?
Well, yeah, I don't know how much they actually changed stuff, but I know at least they had to kind of flip the image and stuff to...
Yeah.
At the very least, so... I don't know if some of them did more than that, but translation's always going to be, you know, more of an art than a science, I think, so.
But anyway, I think I'm going to want to purchase these from mycomicshop.com. Like, I became vested in the story, and the covers are to die for. The covers are almost worth the purchase itself.
Yeah, there's a pretty classic...
They're amazing.
There's a classic anime based off of that.
Yeah, I heard, because everybody I replied to saw the anime.
Mm-hmm.
I even had Shannon Gallant, the artist of G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, reply back to it. So, yeah, it's an interesting comic book I'd like to at least try out. I like it. And the other thing is I like the wit of it. Like, there's some humor in the dialogue, especially when he's talking to his robot, like in his own apartment. the robot is like just real witty. Starts off with the robot's trying to get his ass up. Like, he's throwing shit at him. Like, he's like, get up. It's already like 10 o'clock. You got to get up. And he's like throwing like large objects at his head. He's like, get up. And he's like, no. And he looks at his alarm and it's like, it's Sunday, you dumbass. You know, like, it's he's telling that to his robot. And the robot's like, ooh, I forgot. It's Sunday. It's pretty cool that it's a droid.
That's cool. All right,
Chris?
Well, I got something for Rob here, kind of.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I didn't really think about it at the time or do so intentionally, but but I was going to talk about Batman 410. This is by Max Allen Collins, who is... better known as this is kind of the one comic book series run that he's known for, besides has some of his own properties like Mystery were adapted into comics and stuff, but he's kind of known as a mystery and crime writer. But he did this run on Batman, and pencils were by Dave Cockrum, with inks by Mike DiCarlo. This is called Two of a Kind, and it takes place when Batman's decided that he's going to train Jason Todd as Batman.
Robin.
I didn't realize what I said until you pointed that out. So that's how it starts out. Over the first few pages, you have your kind of training montage in comic form, where they show some of the training that Batman is doing, and how he even trains him in weapons that he actually scorns, like firearms, so he knows how to use them if necessary. But and that breaks down to a conversation between the two of them where Jason comments on the fact that they've gone through his rogues gallery over time, and but one villain that they haven't talked about is Two-Face, and Bruce at least claims that that it was just an oversight, he actually then goes into the history of Two-Face. And I guess in some ways this is kind of establishing that for the post-crisis universe, because if you know anything about about Two-Face prior to that, he had a pretty crazy history. And it's basically what we've since kind of been accustomed to since then. Pretty straightforward, similar to what has been seen in the movies and stuff. So they establish that for the new reader as well, and Two-Face's whole obsession with the number two and duplicates of things. But I did, one thing that did stand out to me and thought was interesting is when Jason's out of earshot, Alfred and Bruce have a conversation, where Alfred does kind of call him out a little bit and check him, and, you know, calls him accountable for the fact that he had said in the past that he wouldn't endanger a child again. And Bruce says, well, this child's already a streetwise adventurer, and says that if he left Jason to his own devices, he'd probably go down the same criminal path as his father. Alfred also says, you know, maybe you're mentioning the previous Robin a little bit too much. So I thought it was interesting that they did make an effort to address those issues through Alfred. I think it was a good choice to have Alfred be the one that voices those concerns.
Yeah.
But after they have this conversation, they Batman presents Jason with the Robin costume, mentioning that it is an upgrade on the old one, that there's that incorporates some body armor, but maybe showing some of the effect that the conversation with Alfred had on him. He says Jason asks if it's the real Robin's costume, and after he's given it to Jason, he says, yes, to answer your question, it does belong to the real Robin. and once again, Batman gets questioned by Commissioner Gordon when he shows up to answer the bat signal with a Robin. And Gordon kind of whispers to him, you know, he swore you'd never pair up with a child again. And Batman kind of says something similar to what he said to Alfred and says, basically, this kid is tougher than both of us. So Gordon presents them with something that was sent to the commissioner's office, addressed to Batman, and it's got a hand of playing cards in there with it's a poker hand, basically, with two pair. Gordon also shows the mugshots of two pairs of criminals that are twins. So no surprise, since we had a little focus on Two-Face earlier in the issue, we're conveniently given his background. These clues, of course, point to Two-Face. And what Batman knows and Robin doesn't realize is that Jason Todd's father was a Two-Face henchman that was killed by Two-Face. So we get a sequence of several pages where we see Two-Face and these henchmen that are two pairs of twins going on they're attempting to rob a casino, and Two-Face slips his coin, the evil side comes up, and it is kind of interesting that these twins haven't been working for him very long, so they're surprised. They're kind of used to the typical way of doing things, where they're going to case the joint and they're going to put together a plan, and that does not roll with Two-Face at all. And he he flipped the coin. That means it's got to be done now. And his plan is pretty bold. There's some armed officers who are they're walking through the casino with basically carts full of money. They're transferring out some of the casino's funds, and Two-Face and his gang they stick him up right there in the middle of the casino, and it's all basically Two-Face shoots one of the guards. It's all basically hinged on the expectation that the guards will let them go if they threaten the large crowd of people that are around them, that they'll just start firing into the crowd if they don't let them go. And they've got a replica waiting outside of the armored car service. The twins are pretty impressed until they knock on the back of the door and find that Batman and Robin are inside, having already knocked out and tied up the other pair of twins that had brought the vehicle there. So Two-Face gets a bat boot to the face as soon as he opens the door, as the door is open. And they pretty much, it's definitely not about, the issue definitely is not about the ability of Batman and Robin to take out Two-Face. It's not hinged on Two-Face having some grand scheme. So that is pretty much taken care of pretty quickly. To get to the point at which Two-Face attempts to take a hostage of an old woman, and Jason volunteers himself as a substitute for her, convinces Two-Face that based on partially the fact that it would give him more leverage over Batman, but even more so, he tells him he's the second Robin, making it fitting for Two-Face's compulsion. So, so Two-Face agrees and lets the woman go and takes Robin with him to his getaway vehicle, which is Two-Face themed, and also a two-door vehicle. He says, "Here's my custom two-door. How do you like it?" And Robin says, "It's too much." But Robin actually escapes pretty easily, and Batman was following them in a civilian car he commandeered. And so they get back again. Like I said, it's not so much a difficult scenario as it is to kind of set up Jason taking that action. And Batman points out that the hostage exchange was a foolhardy move. And Jason asks if he flunked his test. And Bruce says that hardly the other Robin would have done the same thing. So he leaves Jason to... Jason says, you know, he's pretty wired up by everything that happens. Can he stay up a little bit and study a while? Bruce says, yeah, just don't stay up too late. And actually, he's been calling him Mr. Wayne, and Bruce tells him to call him Bruce. So it seems to be going well, kind of, with the new Robin, really. But Jason decides, since they kind of skipped over Two-Face in their training, he decides to go into the computer's files and do some investigation on the criminal. And the issue ends with him pulling up the screen that shows his father, presumed dead, Two-Face believed to be responsible.
Bum, bum, bum.
So that that cliffhanger kind of, yeah, it the next issue follows up on that, and Jason's decisions are in regards to finding out that information. But it was a good issue. I've found this with some of the prior issues too, of with Max Allen Collins writing tends to feel a little more like what has gone before than what's to come. It feels a little Bronze Age, which isn't a bad thing necessarily, but it sort of stands out from other DC writing at the time that seems to be starting to like skew a little bit more towards a new style of the 80s. Not a huge distinction, not a huge difference, but it feels a little Bronze Age flavored. But yeah, I've enjoyed reading Jason Todd's appearances from the beginning. I had read years ago his death, that story, and some of the later Jason Todd stuff when as an adult and stuff, but I hadn't read a lot of the his early appearances, and I think it'll be interesting to reread A Lonely Place of Dying with having read all his appearances up to that.
Yeah.
You know, eventually get there.
I haven't read Lonely Place for Dying in a long time. Something that I should revisit.
Yeah. It's been a while for me too. And I just read it when I did, just because I knew of it as a famous story, you know?
Yeah. Very cool. Glad you enjoyed it.
It's good stuff. I just read some Two-Face recently too, Rob, that Batman and Robin.
Oh yeah, I saw you.
When they changed it to the Batman Two-Face, that was that was a great story.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot about it, but I remember
They retconned it a little bit in the fact that Two-Face wasn't like a really good DA, like he had links into the mob through these two twin sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got one of the twin sisters killed. It's ironic because they're twins, right? They're the duality of it. They were like the mafia's daughters, if you will.
Yeah.
And later on, the one that lost her sister was seeking revenge. And then Harvey wants to kill her because she actually killed Gilda, his wife.
Yes, I do remember this now.
Yeah, she killed. So she killed his wife. So that's like it's like a circular thing. And if you think in terms of like the duality of it, it's pretty amazing because, you know, he really thought this plot out in terms of two. It's pretty incredible.
Just so nobody yells at me later, it's A Death in the Family is the name of the story.
Oh, Lonely Place for Dying is the Jason or no, the Tim Drake one?
That's the one that introduces Tim Drake,
Yeah, that's right.
yeah.
Oh, hey. I didn't, no one remembers.
Death in the Family is where you dialed in to call. I actually dialed in. Did any of you?
I did not, but I remember here seeing in the, because I was a paper boy, I remember seeing in the newspaper after the results that people had dialed in to and voted to kill Robin. It was actually like right in the might have been like on the front page in the of our newspaper, just in the lower bottom part, that Robin's going to die.
When I really loved him is when he threw that diplomatic immunity guy out the window, and I voted to keep him. Like I was like, I want to keep him. I love how it was had that like Lethal Weapon type story, but you know, like you can't touch me. I have diplomatic immunity, and next thing you know, that guy's Batman comes in the room, and the guy's on the you know 7 floors down, dead, and Robin swinging away.
Exactly.
Plus, I love the Nocturna stuff, and she was sort of like a stepmom.
That was, I mean, for me, that was the time frame that I really started like collecting like consecutive issues. I think that must have been around the time or just prior to discovering the comic book store. Whereas before, I had plenty of issues before those, but it was hit or miss, just going to the convenience store. So that was like a highlight of mine, like right around that time frame.
Yeah, I just read Batwoman too with Nocturne in it, and it had Scott Collins drawing her, and oh my God, it was like the sexiest Nocturna I have ever seen. Like if I can get a commission, I used to get like Freedom Fighters from him, so I have like four Freedom Fighters, but I want to switch gears, and I'm gonna ask him if I ever see him at a con again to do me a Nocturne, the Nocturna.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking at these covers. Like, wow. Yeah, that was it. Like 363. That was like one of my first issues that, like, okay, I'm buying every issue, every single issue.
Yeah, I was like,
Having to
why is she
search for
so pale? She looks like a vampire.
them. It was awesome. Oh, that's great. All right, I'll do my next one. So, this killed two birds with one stone because it's a retro book, but it also was in my last shipment of comics from DCBS because it was the Brave and the Bold number 28. Because it was a facsimile edition, so I read the first appearance of the Justice League of America against Starro the Conqueror. So, what happens in this issue is it starts off with Aquaman, and he gets a message from Peter the Pufferfish that a strange, huge starfish had come from outer space and actually went into the ocean, selected three regular starfish, and like evolved them into large creatures such as himself, with the ability to, like, a lot of his abilities in terms of being able to communicate telepathically, to be able to fly, and so on and so forth. So Aquaman puts out a summons to the Justice League, which I thought was interesting that this is the first issue that references a Justice League, right? But they make it sound like there's already been this Justice League. It's not like they're forming for the first time. He's saying, I'm going to summon the Justice League for an emergency meeting. So he summons everybody and Wonder Woman and Green Lantern, Flash and Martian Manhunter are all able to join the summons. Superman gets the summons, but he's out in outer space destroying meteors that are going to crash into the Earth, so he can't come. Batman gets the summons, but he's about to close in on two of his arch enemies in Gotham City, and he says that he's going to keep in contact with the other members, but he's not able to come to the meeting right away either. So the rest of them go to their cavern, their cave headquarters, that first headquarters that they had, and Aquaman tells them what the deal is. It turns out that to start out with here, Flash is actually the chairperson of the Justice League, and he assigns each person their duties. There's three of these starfish that Starro had evolved. So he sends Green Lantern to take care of one in the Rocky Mountains. He then sends Wonder Woman and Martian Manhunter to tackle the one that's in Cyan City. And Flash is going to tackle the last. And he asks Aquaman to patrol the sea in case Starro is trying to make any more giant starfish. So the next chapter is Green Lantern going up against Starro. And Starro ends up attacking a U.S. Air Force jet that actually holds an atomic bomb, and he destroys the plane and grabs the bomb. Green Lantern manages to save the plane from crashing, saving all of the people inside. And as he's flying off to chase after Starro, Starro explodes the atomic bomb. And Green Lantern manages to save himself by creating a bubble around him so he doesn't get radiation. But Starro is in the middle of the radiation, which gives him even more incredible powers, and he's able to shoot like beams out of his tentacles. So luckily, Green Lantern is able to dodge these fast enough and shoots Starro right in the middle eye there with his Green Lantern ring, and compels him to shrink back down into size until he becomes an ordinary starfish, which I didn't realize that his Green Lantern ring could do, you know, these types of things, but that's what's happened. So then, of course, it cuts to Wonder Woman and John Jones, and they're going to Science City, where another giant Starro is grabbing the entire building of the Hall of Science with some of the greatest scientific brains in the United States and ripping it out of the ground and carrying it away. What Starro's plan is he's put all of the scientists inside in suspended animation, and he's going to drain all of their intellect to help the main Starro. So Wonder Woman and Martian Manhunter start attacking. Wonder Woman tries to loop her lasso around Starro, and she gets pulled off of her invisible jet, but she lands on top of the building that Starro is holding, so she's kind of bracing herself there. In the meantime, Martian Manhunter is grabbing a bunch of the small little pieces of meteors from the larger pieces that Superman had destroyed up in outer space and is blowing them into Starro's eye to try to distract him. And however, Starro starts shooting again, nuclear energy that is stored in his body, shooting him out of his tentacles at both of the heroes. Wonder Woman's able to block them with her bracelets, and Martian Manhunter grabs a piece of the roof that's lead-lined because of the nuclear experiments that they do inside, and is able to block it that way. She manages to get hold of her jet again and pulls the building away from Starro. As she's doing that, they start pummeling Starro and without him holding on to this building and absorbing kind of the energy of the scientist's brain, he starts getting weaker and he falls and just is reduced to, I mean, he's not down to the size like Green Lantern's was, but he's drained of all of his power. So then we finally cut to Flash, who's going to Happy Harbor, and he finds actually what happens is it immediately cuts to a young teenager named Snapper Carr, who is spreading a turf builder on his lawn, and his family comes out like a bunch of zombies and starts walking towards the main plaza of Happy Harbor. He notices that the rest of the population of Happy Harbor do the same thing, and he sees that then this huge starfish has all of them under control. He immediately realizes, Starro that is, realizes that Snapper Carr is not under his influence and is about to destroy him when Flash moves him out of the way. So they're trying to figure out why Snapper Carr is not hypnotized like the rest of the town, but Flash needs to get back to defeating Starro. And you would not believe the way that they have Snapper Carr speaking. Flash asked him why he wasn't affected, and Snapper Carr says, "I don't know, Flash. Man, I'm bugged. I'm really swinging, casting orbs on you like this, Flash. Like I'm having a happy mare, you dig?" So it's really, I don't think anyone was really talking like that even back in the 60s.
No, it's the worst. I've read some of those early Justice League. Oh man, it's like that meme of Steve Buscemi. Like, how you doing, fellow kids?
Yes. Yeah, it's so funny. It's just like so ridiculous. But so Flash comes back out, you know, after Starro, and he's getting away from, as Starro's trying to zap him, he's just running out of the way. But finally, Flash decides, he's like, "I'm going to go around Starro very, very quickly and start spinning him like a top." So he starts doing so, but Starro managed to float up high enough to get into the local lake, try to rejuvenate himself. But Flash isn't going to let that happen. He starts using vibrations to create like almost like, you know, Moses parting the Red Sea. He does that and parts the lake and ends up exposing Starro and then letting the water crash back on top of Starro, knocking that Starro out. So him and Snapper figure out without telling us what exactly was the issue, why he wasn't hypnotized like the rest of them. So he takes Snapper back to where the main actual Starro is and meets up with the rest of the Justice League. They go ahead and to varying extents start attacking him, trying to defeat Starro. At one point, Green Lantern is trying to knock him out the same way that he did the other, but Starro turns himself all yellow, making Green Lantern's ring ineffective. So what it turned out was that as Snapper was caring for his lawn, he was putting different stuff on the lawn to make it more healthy, including calcium oxide, which is lime. And they go to explain that oystermen use quicklime to fight starfish who are preying on oysters as they're trying to catch oysters. So the lime protected Snapper Carr from Starro, and they go to a nearby farm and get and Green Lantern gets several barrels of lime and totally cover Starro with the lime and totally knock him out. They John Jones uses a super breath to kind of freeze the lime onto Starro, and now he's a huge living statue of lime. And they're so pleased with everything that had happened that in appreciation for their for his help, they've elected Snapper Carr as honorary member of the Justice League of America and give him a signaling device so that they can call him for an emergency meeting. And they say, "Well, Snapper, what do you say?" He says, "My fingers are saying it for me, Flash." And he says, "Snap, snap." So that was the end of the very first appearance of Justice League of America, Brave and the Bold, number 28.
Yeah, that's definitely like it's an interesting example of how they were trying to market. Like, they had the idea that kids wanted to see themselves in Snapper as a friend with the Justice League, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But I don't know about then, but I think kids would rather just imagine that they are Batman or Superman or.
I think
no, they don't want to be Wendy and Marvin. That's for sure.
Wendy yeah. and Marvin, Zan and Dana, you have the best of both worlds.
They'd rather be like Robin or all the sidekicks.
Uh huh.
Better yet, Spider-Man. Then you're your own thing.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's the kind of the philosophy behind me and Robin too, but it was like more successful.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But you don't see that as much anymore.
Of that lineup, who was retconned out of it?
Retconned? What do you mean?
As being one of the founding members of the Justice League.
Out of those five, or out of
out of those five.
I don't know. Was it Wonder Woman?
Yep. And who was she replaced with?
Oh, Black Canary.
Yeah. Yeah.
I forgot. Yes. Yes, they had to do that after, when was it, post-crisis?
Yeah, post-crisis.
Yeah, because they said that she was a newer hero. And
they
now she's the very first hero.
They just released that on the dollar books. I don't know if you get the dollar books, but...
No, I don't get those.
They released JLA Year One.
One of the. I forgot about that book. I have that series.
Yeah, so do I. But I get the dollar books too because I'm all in, man. That means everything. Is it my turn?
I think.
Yep.
Yeah. It is, all right.
So what I read is Lord Pumpkin.
Lord Pumpkin.
Lord Pumpkin from the Ultraverse.
Oh.
And the interesting, I didn't get to finish it because it was four issues, and I only read one through three. I will say that I enjoyed the flip book better. The flip book was Necromantra.
Mm.
Lord Pumpkin was done by Danko and Hotz. And Hotz has a similar style to like Kelly Jones. He draws like a really creepy stylistic art, which goes really good with Lord Pumpkin. And then Mike W. Barr did Necromantra along with Gabriel Gecko. And I like what he did with the art on there. But Lord Pumpkin came off of... A crossover event with the Ultraverse, and it was called Godwill, and he was sort of stuck on this planet where Godwill took place, and he couldn't escape, but he also got in touch with Loki, because at this time, the Ultraverse was, I don't know if they were like fully procured by Marvel or what, but they started throwing in Marvel characters like Loki and Juggernaut. Juggernaut was in Exiles, and Black Knight was in the Ultra Force, and all kinds of different characters were popping up left and right in the Ultraverse. And in my opinion, the universe started to degrade when they started introducing the Marvel characters. I mean, it's still interesting and stuff and historically significant, but what made the Ultraverse special started to go away because a lot of the characters that were taking the limelight were Marvel characters, and we'd seen them before. But Lord Pumpkin was sort of spawned from this God Will off of a pumpkin seed, and he's pretty evil. Like, he is not a good person. I hadn't read this before. I own all the Ultraverse, but I haven't read this before. I read Lord Pumpkin issue 0, but I haven't read this 4-issue miniseries. And I did read a back issue spotlight. It was like a Halloween spotlight several years ago that made me want to read Lord Pumpkin, because all the writers of back issue like give you all this like great historical data that they're really well researched character spotlights on characters, and that's why I tend to buy all of the back issues, because you never know what you're gonna miss.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know in the latest back issue that just arrived for my last shipment of DCBS, it's kind of sad to say, but it is my last shipment until who knows when. But it is it had a back issue with Tom DeFalco, so I'm like I'm looking forward to reading that. But Lord Pumpkin gets in this, and he wants to make a deal with Loki, and he has this like jewel, and it looks like an infinity gem. They do involve the infinity gems in the Ultraverse, and he says, "I'll give you this gem if you restore my size." Like, he's like a micro character, he's like really small. He wants a size and power restored, and Loki takes the gem, and of course he's the god of lies and mischief, so he's like, "Well, you gave me the ring. Now I'm just going to turn you into a regular scarecrow on a pumpkin patch." And he does that, and he's trapped. He can't, like, move. He has his, while his brain is there, his body is that of a scarecrow. He can't move. But there is a girl on this farm. She's a little girl, and she goes out there with her doll every day and talks to her friend, who's this Lord Pumpkin. She doesn't know how evil he is, but she becomes best friends with Lord Pumpkin. He eventually convinces... Well, one day, she tells her father, "Hey, you know, I have all these conversations." The father's like, "That's kind of weird, but I'll go check it out. Maybe it's just an imaginary friend." So he goes out there with his shotgun, and he pokes at the insides of the scarecrow, and nothing, you know, there's nothing happening. And he's like, you're just imagining this. This is nothing." He leaves the scarecrow out there. He goes on about his business. Later on, the little girl, every day she's tempted to release him. She wants to untie these ropes that are around him. Well, one day she decides to untie the ropes, and he goes out there. He scares the little girl, threatens... This is a little girl, and this shows you what a asshole Lord Pumpkin is. He goes after the little girl like he's going to kill her, but then goes to where she lives and kills her mother and father.
Oh, what a nice
and
guy.
Almost, yeah, kills the little girl. And then it kind of gives the origin story. So this guy's not a good guy, and I think what it's leading to is he's going to go after Loki for what Loki did to him. And he gives the origin story of Lord Pumpkin. On the Necromantra, it's very similar to what you described, Rob, recently when you read Mantra.
Uh-huh.
It's another male inside of the Necromantra body.
These two separate stories?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
It's a flip book.
Yeah.
So in reality, you should buy two, right? You should file one under Necromancer if you're anal retentive, and another one under Lord Pumpkin, and you'd have both books.
Yeah. Valiant used to do that to me back
in the... There's a lot of flip books in the 90s, and it was confusing, and it gets more confusing when you go to fill runs. Even on, like, mycomicshop.com, you say, "Oh, I missed this," and in reality, you didn't miss it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you have to get two just so you can put one in each series. Otherwise, it looks like you have a hole. Mm-hmm.
But Necromantra is about a woman, and she's like in medieval times. I guess she was in Mantra, and then she got banished via magic into the medieval times. And she's powerless at the time. She's a sorceress. She has no power, but it's really a dude in a woman's body. He's another, it's another situation like Mantra. And he's not a good person either. So this is like a villain spotlight. And she lands on this foreign land, and she's rescued by a knight and her his daughter, who recently lost the queen to he's actually a king. I'm sorry, he's not a knight. And they bring her to the house. She eventually like lures him in and falls in love, and then she does the Black Widow thing. On the night that they're married, she kills him, and she becomes queen and starts a war. And the way she starts the war is there was another king in the neighboring village who comes over, and he's like, God dang, man, this queen is beautiful, and we can make more peace if we unite and become one kingdom. And he proposes to her, and the first thing that she does is she starts ripping her clothes when he proposes. So she just starts ripping it, tearing her clothes off, ripping her top off, and screaming bloody murder. Goes out to the window and says, he's trying to rape me! The king is trying to rape me! And all the other people run up there, and the king gets away with his soldiers, and he's like, I didn't do anything, I just proposed to her. And so it starts a war between the kingdoms, and it looks like that other king is well-versed in sorcery, too, because he's got like a Merlin-type guy who creates a huge demon to fight her, but they eventually win. And meanwhile, she's sort of adopted the daughter of the real king that she murdered on the wedding night. But yeah, these aren't good people, but it was a compelling story, and I want to see where it goes. And it was stories that I haven't read before.
I've never heard of Lord Pumpkin ever, so this is something new for me.
He looks pretty iconic.
Yeah, I was just looking at the covers. It's pretty cool. That special edition one looks like you can get a good picture, a good look at him.
Yeah, there's Lord Pumpkin Zero, and then there's Lord Pumpkin Necro Mantra,
yeah,
which was 4 issues. I was a big fan of the Ultraverse. At this time, I was in college, and I just wanted new stuff. Like, if it was, I was still into the Big Two, and I'm always into the Big Two. Like, I never left the Big Two, but at this point, I wanted some different stuff. So if it was like Triumphant comics, or if it was Ultraverse, or any of the other stuff that were like continuity-driven universes,
mm-hmm.
later on cross-gen, like, I love that stuff. So,
that's awesome.
The Ultraverse. You are missed. The only thing we could hope for is that the license will revert back to open to become public domain, and we'll get some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. Chris, you got something?
Yeah, let me just finish bringing it up here. Did I read? I read this before bed, so I don't know if I remember all of it. This was the last thing I...
Well, I read mine at 3 in the morning, because for some reason, 3 o'clock is the time I get up. That's the time Barb goes to bed, and that's the time I get up. So...
Yeah, I don't know how she does that.
Yeah, I don't know how she does
up
it either.
That late. So yeah, I was reading Blue Beetle number 15 last night, the Len Wein, Ross Andrew series, and this is where this is like already into a storyline where Blue Beetle has gone back to Pago Island, connecting back to the previous Blue Beetle.
Dan Garrett.
Yeah. And there's a Chicago police lieutenant named Max Fisher with him. and there's this giant red robot called Carapax that they're fighting, trying to figure out what's how to beat it. Fisher is shooting this gun at it. It seems to be bulletproof. And this robot was in an underground lab on the island. Or at least it's been on this island all along, and there's also possibly an underground lab. And so they try to put some distance between themselves to try to find something on that island. As they're running away, they have a bit of a conversation between the two of them and fill in each other some background. The detective's there trying to figure out the truth about Dan Garrett's murder. Blue Beetle, his uncle, is supposed to have had the lab on the island. Ted's a little surprised that the detective knows who he is. He says, you know, your uncle, such and such. He says, you know who I am? And he's, you know, just talks about the fact that he's a professional detective and stuff. There's more for them to worry about. It seems that that Dan Garrett's mind somehow is transferred into this Carapax robot. So as they're talking, it catches up with them, and Blue Beetle has to do some acrobatic moves and knock some equipment off of a high shelf onto the robot to try to delay him, which is kind of the game they're just kind of playing keep away to try to figure out something that they can use to actually stop the robot for real. The detective sets some explosive charges, and then they're trying to get out of the room in time, and they don't quite make it. The explosion goes off, and it's enough to kind of throw them into the air and knock them out. So then we switch to a new scene with back in Chicago, and a woman named Melody Chase, who's the second in command of Cord, Cord Inc., is complaining about the fact that Ted has disappeared again. She's got some paperwork from an employee named Randall Truman and has them sent over. Surprised when he walks in to see that she finds him to be a rather handsome man, and they're making kind of googly eyes at each other. she calls him Mr. Truman, and he says, and the name is Randy. And she says, yeah, I'll just bet it is. back on the island, they just barely made it outside. Must have been thrown there from the explosion. Ted calls his bug to get them up off of the island. Meanwhile, the detective still wants to know what actually happened on the island between him and Garrett. The bug just gets clear as the Carapax comes flying out of the underground in like a big explosion of rock. And there's a few pages of a sequence of them trying to evade its attacks from the ground, shooting out like little missiles from its arm and throwing giant rocks at the bugs. we get some more background stuff on back in Chicago, the two of them are still talking, trying to figure out how to put an end to Carapax permanently. Some kind of it's actually the detective suggests that maybe if they could electrify the outer hull of the bug, because at this point Carapax has managed to jump and attach himself to the outside, and it's but Ted's like, you know, I've already thought of that. We don't have enough power to do that. And things are getting more dire because Carapax manages to crash through one of the window ports and has a way into the ship. So again, in sort of the same way that they were on the island, they're trying to keep away from him using bulkheads inside the ship to slow him down. And they actually put on gloves and gloves and knee pads that have suction cups on them, and climb out onto the outside surface of the ship. Actually make their way around to the front of the ship from the back just in time. As Carapax has figured out what's gone on and goes back towards the front of the ship, Blue Beetle shoots the bug up into the sky and then just as suddenly plummets downward. It creates a sort of free fall within the ship. He's actually able to use momentum to grab a hold of the Carapax's one arm and throw him out the window that was smashed open, and drops him into the ocean. Because of his significant weight, he immediately sinks deeper and deeper. It's miles deep at this point. As far as they know, Carapax still needs to take in oxygen. So they take off in the bug back towards the States, with the detective promising that they still have a lot of things to talk about, even though he knows that Ted didn't kill Dan Garrett. It was a fun story. I like the way that Ween manages to keep things, keep the tension going throughout. You know, it's Blue Beetle. He relies on technology and his power level isn't super high. So it's interesting to see how they have to try to just continue to save time, basically, and make time rather until they can figure out some way to overcome the robot. So managed to make an interesting threat out of the robot
or the suit, whatever you want to call it. It's pretty fun. Blue Beetle, obviously, it's a good little series.
Yeah.
From start to finish.
Yeah, I'm very fond cool. of it.
Yeah.
It has an essential on it, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Showcase, sorry. Got it mixed up. Mixed
the whole,
up with
it's
companies.
The whole thing, right? The whole run?
Yeah, it's the whole run.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I've got one more. Our friend and co-host of Everything Else, Joe Crawford, has been reading some Micronauts. So I had only a handful of issues of that volume, but when they started the new volume in whenever it was, in 84, I picked it up and I bought the whole series. So I'm covering the Micronauts, The New Voyages, Volume 2, Number 1, from 1984. The story was by Peter B. Gillis, and the pencils were from an unknown named Kelly Jones. And
that's awesome.
His first work was the first series of Micronauts right before it ended, and he continued on as it was relaunched.
What number are you talking about?
The first issue of the second volume.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So this one starts out interestingly. It's some weird asteroid-looking thing that's circling a star. And you're getting like internal dialogue from apparently this like asteroid type thing is alive. It has all these like craters that when the sun turns out it's like pulsating, and when it pulsates, it all these weird things emanate out from all of these craters, kind of like to absorb the energy from the pulse of the sun. There's only a couple of pages, and then it quickly cuts to our crew on the Endeavor 2 in the Microverse. We've got Commander Ran, who is the main the leader of this group. Marionette, who is the woman. We've got a courier, Huntar, who's like kind of like a almost like a Clayface type guy. He can change shape, do all sorts of stuff. We've got Bug, who I think a lot of people are familiar with.
That's the Marvel created one.
Yep.
So and, that's why you never see Bug in the IDW series.
Right, right. And well, I think that some of the other is Marionette in the same boat as
yeah,
well.
Marionette is too, and she's the sexiest one. Man, holy yeah. mackerel.
Yeah. And then we got Biotron and Microtron. They're two of the, you know, those are the more, along with a courier, those are the actual, like, Micronaut toy type characters. So what had happened is, in the prior series, and where this is picking up, they have finally defeated Baron Karza. And so now they just can do whatever. So they're going to embark on a journey and kind of go off and do some exploring. So as soon as they get out of the gravity of the local star system, they go ahead and hit warp drive. As soon as they do, they start hearing an alarm, and there is a malfunction in the warp drives, and unfortunately it's something that can only be fixed by going out, and they can't power down the warp. And ironically, the more and more the malfunction happens, the faster and faster they're actually warping. So Commander Ran insists on going out on his own. He puts on a protective space suit, and he's a courier and Huntar both volunteer to go out there, saying that they're both more suitable. But Commander Rand says, listen, I've been doing this for literally 1,000 years. I'm not sure how time goes in terms of lifespan there in the microverse, but he's been doing this for 1,000 years. He's got more experience with these types of spaceships than anyone else, and he's going to go ahead and he's going to take care of it. So the only thing protecting him from basically like hyperspace is a thin shield that the Endeavor surrounds itself with. Because of the malfunction, this kind of warp shield is becoming thinner and thinner. So there's very, very small amount of space between the actual hull of the spaceship and this shield. Basically, he's crawling. He can barely even lift up his head, or he will pass this shield. So he gets to the first area that there's a problem with, and he pulls out a small tool and he starts fixing it. However, as he's concentrating, he starts trembling, and the tool slips out of his hand and starts floating away. Out of instinct, he immediately reaches out to grab it, and his fingers go past the warp shield. And it's really a cool visual where, like, the ends of his fingertips just, like, warp, like, just, like, expand, elongate, and expand out. And totally like warp away from his, he pulls backwards and thereby like cutting off all of his fingertips. So he starts screaming. But of course now he's losing blood too. So his suit that he's wearing was part of a Karza dog soldier suit that you can actually, at different parts of the suit, you can actually seal it. So on that part of the suit, you can seal at the wrist, and he's got to do it. So he presses a button, it seals at the wrist, basically cutting his hand off at the wrist, but also keeping him from losing any more blood. It cauterizes it, and now he only has one hand. So he manages to crawl to the other two junctions that need to be bypassed, and he manages to save the ship, and then it just becomes unconscious. Huntar, he's got, again, his ability is very much like a plastic man or like a clay face, and he's able to send out tendrils from the nearest port, and he drags Commander Rand's body back inside. They revive him, and he's going to be all right. However, they go ahead and transition back into normal space. They don't even know where they are at this point because they had been traveling at such a great speed that they're totally out of any type of system that their charts have. They're totally outside of, they have no idea where they are, basically. They're lost in space, so to speak. So then they notice in the local system that there is one kind of planetoid, a tiny planetoid orbiting a star that is pulsating. And so this is where we get from the beginning of the issue. So they notice the actual, whatever this being is, which seems to be the planetoid itself, kind of sends out almost like a energy wave to observe their ship and see exactly what it is. So they've been bombarded by these high gamma rays. They put shields up, but now they want to go and explore and see what's going on, what exactly this is. So they land on this planetoid. They start looking around. They actually crawl into one of the craters and start going through. And it's very much like it's some sort of biological system on the inside of this these craters in these caverns, and trying to figure out what exactly it is. In the meantime, you're also hearing the inner dialogue of this planetoid itself, because it's very excited that this being, it reads like the ship as a being, has landed on it. It's the first time it's ever experienced something like that. But at the same time, they know that the star is about to pulsate again, and this is when it always extends its kind of technological things out of the craters to absorb the energy. It's simultaneously wants to do that, but also is afraid of scaring away the starship because it's never encountered anything before. So it's planning, okay, well, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to scare this thing away. And they start, again, the Micronauts are going through deeper and deeper until they finally encounter this larger chamber. And it seems that it's filled with what they think are some sort of eggs. Now, the eggs seem to be being fed this hard radiation that the planetoid itself absorbs when the star pulsates. So now the star is about to pulsate. They lose all of them except for Biotron and Microtron had started exploring. So they lose connection with Biotron and the starship because of the radiation. And the last thing that you read is that the planetoid is thinking, listen, the gift from the stars is a beautiful thing. How could it ever hurt my tiny new companion? So it's planning on extending its tendrils to absorb it. And at the same time, you get the feeling that this is going to be extremely dangerous for the crew of the Endeavor. And that's the last page. So it's going to pick up where it left off on the next issue to see exactly how this interaction between the planetoid and the members of the Endeavor, is this going to be a friendly thing, or are they going to come in some sort of conflict? And also, what exactly are in those eggs to be determined. So this is the first time that I've reread this since it came out in 1984. The art was fantastic. The cover was absolutely beautiful. And I think, if I remember correctly, by looking at the database, I think Michael Golden did the cover. And it almost looks like kind of like a painted style. And it's a beautiful cover. This was a great issue. Again, first time I've read this in what? Oh, God. Is that 36 years? That's a long time. That was really good. I'm not going to pursue the rest of this immediately, but it's something that I definitely want to revisit. It lasted only 20 issues, so it wouldn't be too much to read the rest of this at some point.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, that. Well, so thanks to Joe for getting me interested in Micronauts, getting back into this.
Right on.
Yep.
I'm going to do a lightning round.
Oh, boy.
All right, it's going to take less than 2 minutes. All right, so I read Moxie from Lightning Comics, so it's really Lightning. Moxie had 3 comics come out. She had Moxie in 1996. There was another series, which I think focuses on Bobby Joe and Nitro, which are her stoner brother and drug addict friend. And then you got Moxie Strange Days, and that's the one that I read. What appealed to me on this cover that I have is it looked like Sam Keith. And I used to hate Sam Keith art. I used to think, man, why is Wolverine so damn hairy? Why are his hair go all the way up, like make him 7 foot tall? I just out of hair. I just didn't like his style. But later on in life, I grew to like it, like a lot. So, like, I really like the Max and all the stuff that he's done.
Isn't that funny how you can change and appreciate over time? It was the same way, I think, when we talked about, what's his name, Bob? Bill,
Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, thank you. I can never pronounce his name. He's the same way. Like, yeah. At first, I'm like, why, this guy can't draw. Yeah. Later, yes, again, he could draw very well. He's got a certain style.
I think it's that when you're younger, maybe you're not wanting stylistic changes. You want your standard comic fare. Yeah, realistic. And then I think as you grow older, you appreciate the experimentation and layouts of other artists that have a unique style.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, Moxie is pretty much, there's not a lot to be told here. She's a demon hunter that kills demonic hordes. And along with her robotic friend, there's another robot that she fights alongside of. And then she's got the brother and stoner friend.
When did you get a hold of it? Did you always have these issues, or did you just...
No, I only have Moxie Strange. I picked this up from Cowabunga. Anytime he gets some weird shit that he wants to get rid of, I'll take it. Yeah. If it's something I've never heard of, I'm pretty interested in it, just to experience it. Plus, with Lightning Comics, I want to get a full run of the entire publishing. I was really into Purge and Bloodfire and back in the 90s. So I had a lot of those comics, but I didn't have a lot of the other ones. Because Purge I could pick up at the comic shop, and Bloodfire I could pick up off the shelf at the comic shop, but the other ones I didn't even know about until later. Yeah. So, it was interesting. It's black and white. It's definitely not as good as Sam Keith art. Like, he tends to put, all his details in the cover rather than the interiors. But I was still entertained. I wasn't, bored reading it. I liked it, and I'm more interested in the Beavis and Butthead brother and stoner friend than I am in Moxie. I'd be more interested in picking up what they are, because they were the comic relief, and they were kind of entertaining. The other one I had was from Blackthorn Publishing, around the time of the crazed Ninja Turtles. This is Cold-Blooded Chameleon Commandos. And this one ran a little bit. It ran for a while.
This was during the phase of the Turtles, kind of knockoffs?
1986 to 1987.
Okay.
Yeah, and it focused on these chameleon lizards that... there's a strong one called Rivet, a quick one called Nerves, a tactical leader like Sergeant Rock, that's they call him Sarge, and then there's a shape-changing one called Radeon, and they were sort of raised by, it's so much like Ninja Turtles, it's such a knockoff, but they're raised and experimented on by a doctor called Dr. Poindexter, and he used special serums and radiations to turn these little chameleons into highly trained intelligence and martial arts and gun-toting lizards or chameleons. And towards the middle of it, the doctor gets kidnapped and they have a new boss, but their whole agenda is to try to rescue Dr. Poindexter. So they end up going to this fortress that had a lot of ambassadors from different countries, and they rescue him, and they heard Dr. Poindexter was there too, and they tried to rescue him, but Dr. Poindexter was nowhere to be seen, and they fought other anamorphic characters like an elephant and a rat and all kinds of different things. But it was interesting enough. It ran for 5 issues and was from Blackthorn Comics, which Blackthorn is known as a publisher that did 3D comics.
Yeah,
a lot
that's
of the
what
comics
I have,
they,
pretty much exclusively,
A lot of the comics that they did back in the day were adaptations of original comics that they converted to 3D or ones that they came up with on their own. So that's what their specialty was, but they probably were like, hey, man, these Ninja Turtles are hot. They're making money. They're making toys. Let's get our stuff out there.
Yep, yeah.
So that's what they did. So I was just going through a box of weird stuff, and I was like, I want to read this. So, yeah, I'm glad I experienced them all. They weren't anything that I was – like the Commandos, I probably won't seek out any more issues unless they're in a quarter box or something. But the Lightning ones, I do want to complete their company. So I'll look for other issues of Moxie.
Does my comic shop have any of that stuff?
Yeah, the lightning ones, I'm very close. I've already started like filling in issues. I think the Moxie stuff and maybe a few other ones are. I'm not missing too many. They weren't around much. They lasted about 2 years, if that.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. You read a nice wide variety of books.
Yeah, I went from the Ultraverse to Lightning to. Lightning and Ultraverse were around the same time. So, and then I read some manga, so that was good. But that's it for me.
Nice. Chris, you got something else?
I think I'm good.
You're good?
Yep.
What's for lunch, guys? I know it's a little early for you yet, Mike, but...
I ate a breakfast burrito while you guys were talking.
Nice.
Barb made a breakfast burrito, so I'm already full.
I'm going to go make a sandwich in just a minute.
Yeah, I had a little sandwich in between there, so I didn't start getting angry at you guys.
That's good.
I might eat something else now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't All know right. what the rest of the day holds for us. Maybe we'll put on a movie that the kids, maybe we'll watch Captain Marvel with the kids. That should be okay for 7-year-olds, right?
The only scene that's kind of strange is the Dr. Savannah when they turn into monsters and
no, not Shazam, the female Captain Marvel one.
Oh yeah, that one's pretty clean. Safe.
I think so, right? Disney. They keep it pretty.
Every time you say Captain Marvel, my brain thinks Captain Marvel, the original Captain Marvel.
I was looking because I'm looking to. At some point, I'd like to buy that Shazam, the 1970s Shazam that had the first new appearance of Black Adam since the Golden Age.
And yeah, so I was
searching. I was searching. I'm like typing in
That's
Captain
expensive.
Marvel. I'm like, why is it showing me just the Marvel
it's Shazam.
Stuff?
Yeah.
I want DC Captain Marvel. I'm like, oh, it's Shazam.
when DC acquired the rights, they couldn't use the word Captain
Marvel. I knew that, yeah. But in my head, he's Captain Marvel, so that's what I was searching for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought of the Shazam movie in my mind too when you said that.
Good for you guys. That's why we're friends.
That's why we're true fans.
DC is in my blood, man. Yep. So like if you tear off anything, I first go to DC and then everything else is below it.
Yep. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I'll probably be reading some. That I'll be finishing that new 52 Batman and Robin that I never finished.
That was Peter Tomasi, right?
Yeah, and Gleason.
Yeah, and Gleason. Yeah.
Yeah, he's basically trying to raise his son. Well, Ra's al Ghul is trying to raise Talia and Damian back from the dead, and Batman's on his trail. Essentially, he just had that arc with Two-Face, which I thought it was one of the best Two-Face stories ever, because I thought it like had a lot of emotional stuff with his wife. Like it showed how much he loved, absolutely loved his wife.
Yeah.
And then she was murdered and he kind of lost his reason.
Well, you know, what's funny is that those were pretty much when it actually was called Batman and Two-Face, those were the only issues of that series that I bought.
Yeah.
And then after that, it went to Batman and Aquaman.
Yeah. And then now he's headed to Paradise Island, 'cause that's where Ra's is at.
Yeah.
Supposedly, but I don't know how the hell he would find a way to get on there without the Amazon saying, "Man's on the island, I want to kill him."
Well, I didn't realize then it went to, for a short period, for a little arc, it went to Batman and Frankenstein.
Yeah, well, Batman early on lost his marbles when he lost his son. So he actually captured Frankenstein and was trying to, like, against his will, he put him on a table and was taking things away from him and everything to try to see if he could raise Damian back from the dead on his own.
Interesting.
So he like lost his marbles.
Yeah. See, I wasn't reading all that at the time, so I kind of missed a lot of that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It probably is on the DC Universe app.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Well, I have a lot of time to read. In about 2 weeks, I'll have a lot of time to read older books. Because that's how long it will take me to get through my big pile.
You should savor some of it. What I would do, though, if I were you, is I wouldn't read the number ones or the stuff that is going to be continued like 6 months from now, because you won't remember where you left off.
Not going to remember anything.
Yeah. All right, well, we can wrap this one up. You guys have a good weekend.
Yes.
What's left of it.
Mike, stay safe. You're going to be on vacation, right?
I will.
Okay, enjoy it.
So,
stay safe.
You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com and also on Facebook under Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button. Oh, shit, we had questions. God damn it. I actually saved them from the last time.
You did?
Yeah.
I've got a little time if you want to do them.
We can do a marathon. They're not big
you
ones.
You guys can have fun with that. I'm going to go.
All right.
Oh, Chris.
I'm going to... No. You can make up answers.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay. You guys take care.
Chris's answer is, I don't really care. I'm tired.
I got stuff. I got stuff clean, to do. Some things.
No problem.
All right. So let's just go through them real quick.
All right. You guys take it easy.
Bye. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
We have, why is there no ongoing Indiana Jones comic?
There should be now. I mean, heck, that's
but
a Disney thing.
But then he said,
thing.
Why does Marvel not want to make us happy? Marvel doesn't own the rights to him.
Who owns that? Is it Spielberg?
No, I don't know. I think it's Spielberg Lucas.
Yeah.
But the Indiana Jones was Dark Horse.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd be interested to know who actually.
You could get a collection, collected edition, I think, in that omnibus of all the Indiana Jones stuff.
Interesting. I'm gonna look that up. Indiana Jones. Who owns Indiana Jones rights?
Spielberg and Lucas, I would imagine.
It says that it's Disney.
Wow.
Walt Disney Company has owned the Indiana Jones intellectual property since its acquisition of Lucasfilms.
Oh, wow. I would have thought Spielberg would have had some of that.
Yeah. Paramount retains the distribution rights. But they own the intellectual property itself.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I did not know that. I would have thought it was Spielberg as well. Although I knew Lucas and him like did it together, I thought that, like you said, that Spielberg would have had some sort of ownership over it as well. That's interesting. I did not know.
Yep. His next question is, favorite obscure comic book that no one ever mentions?
God. It's just so obscure that I can't think of it right now. what do you got?
I don't know. I can't think of a favorite. Like, I like a lot of obscure stuff, but... I read so much, it's hard to pick one.
Let's make them happy and say Atari Force.
Yeah, Atari Force. Nobody ever mentions that.
No, only Kirk.
Scalp Hunter. Oh. Scalp Hunter and Atari Force. Yeah, I think Barb's got the coronavirus over here.
Oh, God, that's not good. She's got to stay home.
Yeah.
We need a Scalp Hunter Atari Force crossover.
I'm trying to think of something that, because usually, like, if you say John Sable or any of that
see,
stuff,
for me,
it's mentioned
I'll
a
say
lot.
Elementals. The Elementals by Bill Willingham. That they haven't had any type of new stuff in 25 years, and I love the Elementals.
Yeah, the guy that bought the Youngblood rights owns the rights to those.
He's a fool.
He's not doing anything with them, but I think he has the rights to those.
Does I think he does, but he seems to rub everyone the wrong way, apparently. So I don't know if anything's going to ever come out from that.
If you... Should I read that?
Huh?
This is a weird question. If you died, does your family have any clue what your collection is worth? Or what to do with it? Jeez!
My wife has some idea. I've kind of told her that, you know.
Yeah, same here. My brother and my wife know about my database, and they know what the value is, and they know what to look up.
Yeah. Yeah, same here.
Do you believe Jose Garcia Lopez has been blessed by the hand of God and is no longer a mere mortal? I just saw a picture of him as a younger guy, because I've never seen him without gray in his beard and head. Uh-huh. And it's crazy how much he looks like a younger version of himself the same. Like, he's always been skinny.
Yep.
He looks facially like the same, and he just had a dark beard.
But yes, I think that that's correct. That's probably right.
And the last question is, will someone bring me pizza?
No, not in this time.
Not in this time. Hey, nobody sent me any cheer wine. So if you get me some cheer wine, then maybe I can give you some pizza.
There
Send
you go.
Over the cheer wine and you'll get some pizza.
That, I mean, that sounds fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think I can get out there and I can probably mail some pizza, deliver some pizza to him. But that's about it. Yeah.
All right, well that's it.
Well,
oh,
that
wait,
was,
wait, there's one,
quick.
There's one more. This is a good one.
Well, let's do it.
Welcome to the jungle, or pour some sugar on me.
Welcome to the jungle, or pour some sugar on me.
Yes, you don't know what that is?
Yeah, sure I do. I have to be Welcome to the Jungle.
Oh, pour some sugar on me.
Mm-mm.
Def Leppard versus me. Guns N' Roses.
I was all in for Def Leppard for the Pyromania, but not as much for Hysteria.
I will tell you this, though, that every time I hear Pour Some Sugar on Me, I think of me at the strip club. And the women that were dancing and what they were doing. So,
well, no wonder you have such fond memories.
Yeah, I have fond memories of Pour Some Sugar on Me. I'm hot, sticky, sweet, from my head to my feet. Yeah. Woo!
Yeah.
I even asked Alexa one time. I said, Alexa, play stripper music. And she played it.
Pour Some Sugar on Me?
That was one of the songs.
That's
yep.
pretty funny. Yeah. Well, yeah.
I was
sense.
Really I was really curious. I know. I was really curious to see if they would play stripper music like from when I was going to strip clubs versus now. You know what I mean?
So, well, I don't know what they play now.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I just know Def Leppard was one of them. I love Def Leppard.
Yeah, I liked. That's when I started to get out of them more. Was Hysteria. I liked the Pyromania. I mean, Pyromania was like one of the actually the first type of music that I bought. It was on cassette tape at that point.
Same here. I burned Pyromania. I listened to that cassette that I knew every song that was after the other.
Yeah.
Even before it even started.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
That and REO Speedwagon's High Infidelity. Just...
See, for me, it was Pyromania and Van Halen 1984. Those were the first two that I ever bought.
That 1984, like, say what you will about Sammy Van Halen, but...
Sammy Hagar.
But that was my favorite incarnation, even though I was like big into David Lee Roth. Like
yeah.
before Sammy came on board, I loved like Diver Down and Fair Warning, and God, I was big into Van Halen. But then 1984 came out, and I was already a Sammy Hagar fan, and I loved that album. Like, I know where I was. We listened to that a lot when I was in basketball. Like, that was my basketball. Some of the music I remember very distinctively.
Which one now?
1984.
Oh, 1984. Okay, I wasn't sure if you meant that one or the following one. Gotcha.
Yeah. That's the best.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yep. That was about it.
Well, that'll be it for us.
We did a great job.
Yep. We did fantastic.
Yeah.
At Rob Krieger.
Yeah.
And I forgot to answer the question for Chris. He said, pour some sugar on me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But he said he chooses neither.
He did? What does he like better?
He liked Tina Turner, a Private Dancer.
Oh, there you go. Hey.
Yeah. That was his Private Dancer, A Dancer for Money.
Nice.
Yeah. he's at Mythmaking ETC, and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. And that's it. It's a wrap. Enjoy your time at home.
Mike, stay safe.
All right. You too.
All right. Talk to you.
Bye.